I don't want a big old, just want to ride on my motorcycle. Hello. That was terrible.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the Nokomoto Podcast. In an episode out of order, I am your host, MotoG Pete. And you know what? Actually, no. Let's do this different. With us is your host, Swiggy.
Yo.
And starring Hollywood's own MotoG Pete. Okay, so let's see. Where are we at? I have been out of action for a week. I have been... Where have I been? I've been on the couch. I've been in bed. I have been sick. I had a bleeding ulcer. I lost pints of blood. I should have gone to the hospital. So I still haven't edited and put out the last proper episode that we did, which a lot of our episodes lately don't need a lot of, you know, editing and nonsense, but this one really did. And I haven't been able to get to it. So you're going to hear this episode first and then prepare yourself for something like 2 hours and 40 minutes, probably maybe more, of scooter talk next week. It's a good episode, though. I had a lot of fun recording it. Got a little drunk towards the end. We took the tiki thing pretty far. But, you know, we had fun with it. So what are we going to talk about on this episode? Let's not waste a lot of time. I think this is a week that we need to catch up on some emails. I think this week we need to do secret questions. Again, I enjoyed that. And, we need to discuss a little bit more of our scooter team that's going to take down Cleveland Moto. All right. Swigs, what do you say we start with best worst bike in the world this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so everybody strap in and get the fuck ready. We're going to do best worst bike in the world this week. You know what that means? That means Swigs and I have each chosen a bike. You chose one, right? Didn't you, Swigs?
I did.
And I don't know what he's chosen. You know what? It could be anything. He could have chosen, he could have chosen his own bike for all I know. But, you know, let's say he did choose his own bike. He might be really pissed at himself. But you know what? Swigs wouldn't do that, because he knows there's no crying in motorcycles. Swigs, if you got pissed at your own choice for worst bike in the world this week, what would you do?
I've been pissed about motorcycles a lot on a lot of worst bike choices, so.
Right, but who would you tell? Where would you send an email to complain about it? Oh my god. I launched you a beach ball the size of the sun and you couldn't hit it back.
I would send it to contact@nokomotopodcast.com.
Okay, thank you. Just like all the listeners are going to do. That's where you send your emails. All right.
We didn't have a lot of warm-up, okay?
A beach ball the size of the sun, Swigs. Okay, so you have best bike in the world this week, Swigs.
I do.
And are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
Okay, ghetto sound effects. And the best bike in the world this week is?
The current generation Honda Africa Twin.
Okay, I like this bike.
So the reason I have chosen it is that essentially this bike has become a platform for basically everything interesting that Honda is doing right now. Because there's really kind of three branches, maybe four if you include the Goldwing as its own separate project thing. But the V4 line is practically dead. There's nothing new going on there. You've got kind of the single the 650, you know, the 500 parallel twin, the 650 in line four, and the 1 liter in line four as kind of the CBR line. You've got the NC750, you know, half a Honda Fit motor line. And then you've got the Africa twin line, essentially.
I just want to correct you real quick there. The NC motor is not half a Honda Fit motor. We don't need people just throwing their sandwiches at their computer screens while they're listening to this. Okay.
But all the new cool stuff is based on the Africa twin. The new... the new Rebel 1100 is based off of it. We've essentially got a new sport tourer type bike that's based off of it. We've got the new Transalp. Or, sorry, the Transalp is not based off of that. But there's a few other new bikes.
It's at least inspired by it, though.
Yeah, technically that's the Hornet motor, which is another cool motor that's coming out. But we had a whole bunch of... I can't remember what they called it. It was like the NF or the NC or something. The new sport touring model or the new touring model. Basically, all the cool stuff right now is coming off of this platform and this motor. And at the same time, I don't think the Africa Twin ever got credit for what it was. You know, everyone liked the old, like the last gen Africa Twin. Said great things about it. But around the time that this one came out, we already had all the big adventure bikes. We already had the high performance kind of street legal dual sports, you know, the 450 dual sports. We already had like the next gen, everything that was super specialized had already come out, and all the heavyweights and the flagships had come out. But this is actually just a really great adventure bike.
So the Africa Twin was hated by all journalists in the same way that the CBR 1000 is hated.
Oh, in the same way the Fireblade is, yeah.
Right. Because they're like, well, it's not the most amazing off-road vehicle that's ever been made. And here's a thing about Honda that I realized recently. Honda likes its riders, and it wants them to be happy. But Honda wants to provide you with a really nice road experience or a really nice like weekend track experience, right? It's like a Honda dirt bike will perform just fine, but Honda's like, you know, we're gonna leave that sort of hardcore hooligan territory to another brand, right? Why does right. You know, Honda could make the most powerful 450 dirt bike, right? They could make the one that just spanks in numbers, but Honda doesn't want that reputation. Honda wants the brand where you buy a fleet of bikes for the whole family. They're like, Kawasaki, Yamaha, Suzuki, let them make the bikes that have a reputation for people breaking their necks on. And the same with the sport bikes, right? They're like, hey, let's make a 600 and a 1 liter that's going to be absolutely fantastic on the street. But for the people that are looking for the absolute fastest bike, let's leave that to the other brands. Then they can get the reputation. The Gixxer can get the reputation for being the most stolen, right? The R6 and the R1 can have the reputation for, you know, the guys who are hot shit at the track. Let's leave this to, you know, dude who wants to get to work in a really cool way. He can buy the CBR 600 and that's where we kind of want to go. You know, now, like I said, Honda would really maybe probably rather not have its people racing. They're like, hey, leave the racing to us. We're Honda. You guys chill out a little bit. And I think that even this philosophy extends to the Africa Twin. It's like, hey, this is going to be a fucking fantastic adventure bike for your highway adventure, right?
Right.
This is, you know, you don't need to be going up the side of K2 with this thing, okay? Leave that to the professionals.
And you also don't need 170 horsepower.
Exactly. So Honda was happy for this bike to be a little bit lower on all the other specs. The big feature of this bike, along with the Goldwing, was supposed to be the dual clutch. And when that didn't wow the journalists, then it just became like every journalist, it just had to shit on it. It became really cool to hate this bike if you were, you know, MCN or your Ride Apart or God bless them, I love their podcast, but Front Wheel Chatter or Front End Chatter.
I kind of want to get a DCT adventure bike just out of pure spite.
Oh yeah.
Just learn how to ride ride off road with a dual clutch. Because there were things.
Well, if you're really going to do it for spite, then you know which bike you need to do it with.
Oh,
the NC750X. That's the way to do it. Use that.
I don't think that even comes with 50/50 tires. May have to do some upgrades on that, because that really is pretending to be an adventure bike. But because I mean, I've never done any off-road riding with the dual clutch, but a lot of people also didn't seem to like the dual clutch on the street as well. And I think I picked it up pretty quickly, and there is some interesting stuff with it, but it does force you to ride differently. And I wonder if there's potentially a steeper learning curve to using it off-road. But I think it's probably, I bet if you, because I mean, think how much you work with clutch control and any kind of slow maneuvers off road.
Right.
And like how important selecting the right gear is. And if you just take all of that control away and now you've got to trust the bike with the clutch control and you've got to trust it with the gear selection, but then occasionally you have to override it. I bet that's really, really unnerving to somebody who's really experienced at off-road riding. But, I mean, they released it, and they put it on an adventure bike, so... Yeah, this is something I really want to try. But, yeah, I mean, but you can leave the dual clutch out. I think it's interesting that they chose to put it on this motor. But, again, it's there as part of the platform. It's one that Honda is this along with the NC750 motor, along with the Goldwing motor, like this is really kind of in that prize territory of what Honda is putting its attention into. And I think it's because it's a fantastic motor that kind of does everything.
It does. I'm just not an adventure bike guy myself. I need to get one at some point just because I'm on a mission to own one of everything. But in general, I can't do it just yet. There's other more important things. I need a Ducati and a Harley first. There's other more basic options I need to cover.
Maybe one day I'll be one of the 10 people to have ever owned a VFR 1200X.
I would weirdly be more into picking up one of those.
Because that comes in a dual clutch as well, actually.
Did it? Did that have the first gen?
That was the first gen with the Goldwing, yeah.
Oh, that was not good, that first gen DCT.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they've done with it. Well, I don't know if there were different generations, but I do remember it being really bad the first time I tried it out on the first Africa twin to have it. Hopefully it's gotten a lot better. And maybe it was specific to that, but it could also just be compensated by having 70 more horsepower, potentially. But there you go. But yeah, everything cool is happening with this motor that all came from this bike. I think it's rad and underrated.
Okay, so are we ready to move on to worst bike in the world this week?
Yep, let's go.
Okay. And the worst bike in the world this week is the current. So this is a 2023 model. It might be just a 2022. It's a 2022 or 2023 Moto Guzzi V7 Stone Dior. Let's bring it up on the screen.
This one might actually be kind of hard to find.
Oh, no. I'm pretty sure it's Christian Dior. Let me see on my phone here. Christian Dior, Moto Guzzi. So you need to oh, no. Dior did the Vespa. Who's the other big dealer? The big sorry, Gucci. No, it's not Gucci. Or it might
That would be a
be.
little too on the nose.
Well, it might. They may have been going for that. It is. It's Gucci. Sorry, not Dior. So yeah, Christian Dior did a so yeah, the Gucci Guzzi, the Palace. Sorry, I got the wrong fashion designer. This is how you know I'm not an idiot. Because which designer it is doesn't really matter, but it's the Gucci Guzzi. Oh, wow. So, how much do you think this motorcycle goes for, Swigs?
I'm gonna guess. Well, Gucci is already horrendously overpriced. And motorcycle luggage is also generally massively overpriced. So if we multiply the two brands together, and also Gucci is very overpriced. So I need to take whatever estimate I have and like cube it. So if I'd expect a normal kind of upmarket thing to be twice as expensive, I'm gonna say this is more like 5 times more expensive. So I'm gonna bet that this is somewhere in the order of like $40,000.
This is $53,000. So what are we looking at?
Okay.
So this is a Moto Guzzi V7 Stone. That is the base of this bike. Not even the regular Moto Guzzi V7, the V7 Stone. Like it's like I've seen and sat on one of these in person, and the card on the side of the bike said Moto Guzzi V7 Stone Palace X Gucci. That was like the name, but like Stone was in the title. So that is the cheaper. That is the cheapest, the least expensive motorcycle that Moto Guzzi makes. The least expensive. This is an $8,500 motorcycle. And repeat that. This is an $8,500 motorcycle. That's it. That's it. This is the very bottom of mid-range, right? Yeah, like, I wouldn't call this an entry-level motorcycle, but it's not.
Yeah, I mean, below this, you're looking at like a base model SV650, or you're looking at like a CB500X, or just a CBR500R. You're really getting into those kind of detuned, mid-weight CC kind of twins. Like,
yeah, this is. So they took, like, again, it'd be one thing if it was the Maranello or, you know, something sort of impressive, or at least the California, you know, one of their bigger, more prestige bikes. But they took a V7 Stone and they put $45,000 of Gucci bags on it, is what they did. So let's say here, what's different than a standard Stone, right? So you get a somehow even less comfortable seat than it normally came with, and it's got this sort of, I don't know, it's like this brown leather with some sort of, like, it's got like the, I don't know, kind of a diamond pattern with like the Gucci logo in the middle of the diamonds in it, like across the seat. It's whatever. It's a seat.
It's leather work that nobody will ever appreciate, essentially.
Yeah. Then we've got a tank done in like a matte finish. It's not even glossy and nice. And it's a Gucci design, which is, as far as I can tell, the most feminine looking camouflage you've ever seen in your
life. I think it's the tank is Palace, because it's got Palace written in the camo pattern.
I thought Palace was just some like Italian word for something that I didn't know. Like, is Palace like an actual pattern design or something?
I don't know. I honestly don't care.
Well, the name of this pattern is Palace, for certain.
Okay.
I just didn't know if that meant something and I'm like an idiot.
Oh, maybe.
But, I mean, they've taken this is like Gucci's take on camouflage. And while it's got while it is like camo colors, like it's brown, it's tan, it's black, it's green, it's also wrong somehow. I mean, just like Hunter's camo would have looked better, but I would have preferred a Realtree V7 Stone, honestly. So there's a strap tank bag that you get that's in the same pattern. The fork covers are in this pattern.
They do have the Gucci logo on the fork covers, which is
okay. That's something.
So they did actually do some manufacturing on this. It's not just leather and paint.
There's a different headlight. Oh yeah, look, go back a couple pictures there, Jonathan. Just go back one more. Stop. Yeah. Go forwards one more. Stop. Look, it says V7 Stone on that side cover. Why leave that on? Why leave that on?
It's a good point, yeah.
Why leave that on? Call it the Moto Guzzi Gucci Palace and just leave it there. Why let people know that it's their the company's cheapest bike. Why? This is the motorcycle equivalent of someone going, oh, this is a $10,000 martini, but it's a regular martini that someone dropped a diamond into.
Yeah, it's like if you're... Yeah, it's like if you were to, like, drop diamonds into, like, some vodka and sell it for, like, a glass for $2,000, like, you want to make sure that you hide the fact that you're just filling it with Grey Goose.
Right.
Like, maybe don't have that bottle out.
So... What else? This has a special headlight where across the front of the light, like the high beam, is vaguely the shape of the Moto Guzzi eagle, which is kind of nice, and I think that should extend and be part of just the Moto Guzzi line. I can't tell if these wheels are special for it or not. I'd have to look at some others. They're kind of nice wheels, but they're nothing extraordinary. I'm sure you can buy some wheels off the internet that look exactly like this somewhere. And then in the back, you've got two, I want to say that they're not big bags at all. They are two tall-ish, but slim fabric Gucci bags in the camo with leather straps and handles.
And like leather seams.
Leather seams that, you know.
So
one drop of rain and they're ruined.
There's two things that are, besides the absolutely insane price of this bike. This is a bike that is meant to be seen. And really, it's meant to, like, sit on the curb and just be admired, is essentially what this bike is.
Paris Hilton buys one, rides it twice, sits in the garage for 6 years, and it gets sold. And then it sits in someone's living room or a shop window.
This is more for, like, some young dude in Monaco to own, really. In fact, I think the only place you could realistically own this is in Monaco.
Yeah,
because you're not going to park this bike outside of, like, secure valet parking anywhere but Monaco.
Right.
This bike, you know, especially since it's this base model, like, this bike doesn't go anywhere that it's not surrounded by equally expensive and trashy things.
Yeah. So... I'm not offended that there's a designer $53,000 motorcycle. I'm not. Like, hey, this is the whole concept of the Gucci handbags to begin with. You can get a perfectly good handbag for $19.95 somewhere, right? But people want to spend $4,000, $5,000, $8,000, $6,000, $20,000 on bags. And it's a prestige thing. This concept can apply to any product. Any product at all. What gets me is, if someone's got $53,000 to spend on a designer tag on a motorcycle, they've got $63,000, right? This could have been on a... next year they're coming out with the supposedly... a new Stelvio, that would have been a lot better for this, let's say. Or like the Marinello, if there was a Gucci Marinello, or I don't know, make it like the V9. No one likes the V9. That line could use a little pizzazz, right?
Yeah, you could go a little bit more upmarket. Yeah.
The TT85. Yeah, like, why the cheapest model that they make? Why the most basic model and then throw Gucci on it?
Yeah, maybe just stack $45,000 of designer trash on a $20,000 bike instead of an $8,000 bike.
Right. Because I don't know. It's very curious to me. Like the did they do some weird market research and was like, the kind of coked up idiot that buys this, you know, really responds to the $50,000 range a lot more than they do in the $60,000 range. Like, this is a product just to make a statement. The whole point of this bike is to have ridiculous articles, and so people like us talk about it rather than them being seen in the real world or whatever. It's for influencers to sit on them, whatever. Although the one I sat on just belonged to a dealership in the Springs. The owner just thought it was a good idea to get one of these from Moto Guzzi and try to sell one to somebody in the public. And I don't know. I mean, maybe the markup was especially high on this one. And he's like, oh, I'll bet we can sell one bike that we'll make like $900 on instead of like the $200 to $400 we normally make per bike sale. I don't know. But this, I saw this at an Italian car show, and you know, there were like all these, you know, really fantastic sport bikes and things lined up, and this was under a tent, and the guys from the dealership were just like, we're as confused as you are. Some idiot. They'd had it for some amount of time, and there was no interest in it, no traction. In fact, they were thinking of getting it out of their dealership and trying to put it in the Gucci store in Denver and see if someone there might buy it. Just like try to appeal to Gucci people rather than motorcycle people. Because motorcycle people are really just sort of offended and repulsed at the entire concept.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even then, like, a V7, it's not a small bike either. Like, you know, at least with stuff like the 947, like, that was a very approachable bike for a lot of people. It was absurd. It was stupid. But it also wasn't $53,000. And it is something that conceivably anyone could ride. Like, you really do have to know how to ride a motorcycle to own something like this. And you have to kind of be invested in riding to buy something like this. Then you have to not be disgusted by the concept. Then you have to have the money. Like, there's a lot of prerequisites to even fathoming owning this bike.
Yeah.
And at the end, then you have to think it's a good idea and be excited about it.
I don't know how many they made. Honestly, they probably made something like 10, you know? And don't get me wrong, I love a boutique bike. But I'm sort of more into the boutique bike area where, yeah, it costs $50,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $150,000, but you're sort of involved in the actual building of it. At every, you know, every couple weeks you get a phone call and they're like, well, we have this option and this option and this option, you know, and like they want to know some of your body measurements to get the perfect handlebar height and oh, did you want this engine option? Or do you want to tune it this way? Do you want to, you know, all that kind of stuff that you get, just the very fine things, you know, it's like getting a tailored suit. It's sort of like getting a tailored motorcycle, like that sort of boutique bike I'm very much into.
Yeah, I mean you could imagine, like, if two people were just given free money, like, to and somebody went out and bought this and then they showed it to me and be like, oh, this is what you spent your money on. I bought two brand new motorcycles and built a garage extension to put them in for the amount of money that you spent on this piece of crap. But it's so...
Yeah, you could buy...
Like, money has to mean nothing to you to
regular
buy
regular Moto Guzzi V stones, and then a set of some really kick-ass gear afterwards, like a set of riding leathers and a freaking, like, you know, $1,200 helmet. You know, you'd have money left out for $53,000, right? I mean, and the tax on that and everything alone, right? You could buy five and have like $5,000 or $6,000 of money left over for like riding gear and shit and custom option. You know, you could really deck a bike out. This is what you could do. You could buy five of these and then have every Farkle, every adjustment, every aftermarket piece that you could possibly want for one of the bikes, and just keep riding these bikes and never change the oil or the forks or whatever. And as soon as one of them has a hiccup and a problem, just throw it in a ditch and pull out the next one, right?
Well, you could ride
for like close to two decades of doing zero maintenance, zero work, zero anything.
Well, you know what else you could do? You could go out and buy a $30,000 motorcycle and then go buy some Gucci like leather and bags and then like and spend $10,000 on it and then go to a motorcycle shop and a leather worker and have them build the racks for you, mount it, and have a bike worth four times as much and probably look just as good.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, actually, if you went to a Gucci store, that bags like this would cost $20,000 each, or $15,000 or something like that. It would shock you what happens like when you walk into one of those places. I mean, it would take your breath away in not a good way. Anyway, we've talked too much about it. My main point was, beyond, you know, the idea of how impractical it is, why the stone? And why leave the stone badge on it? It really betrays the concept. It really shows how unknowledgeable Gucci is in motorcycles, right?
Yeah.
Ducati wouldn't have done this. If there was a Gucci Ducati, like, it'd be on a fucking Panigale. Yeah.
Or at least put it on the carbon. Like,
I don't know. Something. All right. Should we move on to the next segment?
Let's.
Do you want to do emails or secret questions?
Let's do some secret questions.
Okay. You want to go first?
Yeah. I've only got a few. So yeah. I don't know if you saw this story come up yet.
Let's see.
But have you heard that there is now an electric bike that runs on lawnmower batteries?
Bleh. Hold on.
Ego, who makes lawnmowers.
This is exactly what I wanted.
So this is, I can't remember how much it costs. I don't know if they're actually selling it yet, but they just kind of mentioned it. They released it.
I'm good with anything from $800 to $1,200.
We'll see what it costs.
You should be able to buy it without batteries. The whole concept should be you already own the batteries.
Right. So this runs. So Ego does pretty large batteries. They, you know, because what's the one that we all have? Ryobi does, you know, 40 volt batteries, and they do, you know, smaller ones. Whereas Ego, and I can't remember what the other brand is, they just have like straight 80 volt batteries.
Right.
So this runs off of one of those batteries. They say it gets around 30 miles of range, or like 27 miles of range.
That's a lot. Okay.
And Or sorry. Oh, no. I lied. This is 18 miles.
All right. Still good, though.
Yeah, 18 miles from an 840-watt battery. I did do the math on this earlier. This is essentially a 1 kilowatt hour. Or this is a 1 kilowatt hour. No. Sorry, not 1 kilowatt. This is a 1 kilowatt motor sustained, essentially. So 1.3 horsepower, about. It might peak to like 1.8, but this is essentially like, this is about double the power of an e-bike, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks a little bit smaller than a Grom, but like maybe it's kind of like large pit bike sized.
Yeah, I
like
think
if
it
you
is...
put taller suspension on a pit bike.
Mm-hmm.
But this is exactly what I want. Yeah. Ryobi, where are you?
Yeah, I mean, if this could essentially do the same... A Ryobi could do essentially the same thing with 2 batteries.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been made. There is, at the very least, a prototype of it.
Well, clearly what happened was that every company has one of these designed, but they heard our podcast and they just rushed it into production is clearly what happened. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of the electric world and the motorcycle world in general just steals a lot of our content. Looking at you, Ryan F9. It's okay. We don't mind. We're all going to end up talking about the same things. But like, hey, Ryan, just come on the show. Give us an email. Okay, so. I don't want to. We're looking at Electrek. And so all of this information is suspect because it's from our friend Micah Toll, who doesn't know his ass from his elbow. But... but we're interpreting the numbers, and I am sure that this is realistic. This is gonna be... Now the weird thing is like with the top speed, like what's the top speed on this, you think? 30-ish?
It'll be 30. It'll be limited to a low power vehicle.
Excellent. Yeah, it needs to be. Because it unfortunately needs to be legal on the road. It needs to be something you can take to Ace Hardware.
So that is where you're going to run into a problem, because I don't think you can license these.
Doesn't matter. As long as you are able to insure it and put a sticker on it. Low power. I'm not aware of a state where you need to put a plate on a low power vehicle. In some states, you don't have to do jack shit.
So just for a little bit more legitimacy, here it is on EGA's website.
Okay, this will give us information we can trust. So 28 miles an hour. Okay, I'm good with that. Up to 20 miles of range on a single charge. Through
German mass. Yeah, so, sorry. So this is 2 7.5 amp hour batteries. For 20 miles, it's saying 28 miles an hour. Yeah. Even get dual disc brakes on it. Fancy.
Oh, I see. So you can get more range if you it'll run off one battery, but you can throw in another one.
Yeah.
For more range. Okay. Reverse. I don't know why it needs reverse. This is not a large thing.
No, you put reverse on everything electric because it's free.
It's yeah, of course, but
it's also kind of handy to not have to like duck walk backwards on a bike or get off and like push it back uphill if you get into a weird spot. And you've got all the torque anyway. So it's
this also needs to be. Yeah. Like you need to not be afraid to ride this on the road, because this is also something where, hey, you're going camping and you can throw this in the back of your pickup truck or whatever. And the kids can play around with it when you get to where you're going, or ride it down the road to the convenience store that's inevitably near every campsite. Oh, hold on. We're going to have an edit moment. All right. Well done. That is a hell of a secret question quiz. Secret question, Swigs. I'm blindsided, and that is wonderful.
Now we just need... Now everyone needs to have one of these.
Everyone needs to have one of these.
If it's the exact same bike made in the same Chinese factory, and you just swap out the terminals for the sockets for the battery types. But yeah, there should be one of these for every lawnmower company that makes their own lawnmower.
That makes their own range of these tools. Like, we've already said everything we need to on the subject. Craftsman, Ryobi, Husky, or whatever. Every tool brand.
If you've got a large... Yeah, if you've got a large, like, vehicle size...
If any company that's got this battery infrastructure already going, you're an idiot for not making this. You don't have to make a lot, but, oh my god, this is the ultimate dad Christmas present.
It is.
And this really, this sounds corny, but this is truly fun for the whole family. This could be unintimidating enough that your wife or girlfriend will have a go up and down the street. The kids can ride it. You know, you can take it camping pretty easily.
I mean, the best time to ride this, since it does come with some, like, decently knobby tires, is... I would ride this to the store, like, in a blizzard.
Yeah.
Because it's so unintimidating and it's so low stakes if it crashes. This is where you get your winter riding in.
Like, this is... Oh,
and it's got the torque, but it's going to be smooth because it's electric.
There's absolutely room in my stable for this. Oh, yeah. This is great. Okay. All right. Let's go on. Okay, here we go. Secret question, Swigs. If a parts bike is so great to have, how come I've pretty much never known anybody with a parts bike?
Because they're terrible. It's the worst thing to have.
Is this one of those large unspoken about myths in motorcycling? Like, hey, you could get a parts bike for one of these. And da-da.
No, because parts bike, personally owned parts bikes are a total bullshit. Because if something is prone to breaking on your particular model of bike, rather than several things successively going wrong on different parts and having your parts bike to replace it, to replace that part with, it's more likely that the same thing is going to break twice. And your parts bike will only have one of each part. So that's really not helpful.
And if that part was even good to begin with on that bike.
Right. The other thing is that it's a parts bike. So it's already broken down and into a state that is not worth salvaging and rebuilding. And whatever went wrong on that bike is probably the same thing that's going to go wrong on your bike. So the parts bike is really not going to get you much unless it's something particular, like maybe you need some weirdly specific thing, but like the motor uncharacteristically blew out on the parts bike. But even then, if it was worth it for you to pick up the parts bike, it was worth it for a used dealership or for a scrapyard to pick up the parts bike. So you're not going to get the parts bike. You're not going to have this fortuitously, uniquely broken down bike that's going to match your model and be useful that you got to before a dealer, before a scrapper did.
Yeah, it turns out a parts bike is something that's sort of organically happens in a shop. You know, motorcycle shops just accumulate these piece of crap, burnt out scrapyard bikes. And it's like, oh, this thing doesn't work. Oh, here, one of this type of bike rolled in. Oh, let's pull this off of it and whatever. And they have a stable of these things. But
it's also worth it to them because they have so many different customers that they can service a dozen different bikes off of this one bike. They have the space to store it. They can get them cheap and have the time and labor to strip them down, whereas you are going to just stuff it into a corner of your garage and have it just sit there, taking up space, waiting for something to go wrong that hopefully it has a part that you can use to replace. And then it's going to sit there for way too long. It's not going to get used. Like, it's not going to, you're never going to actually pull anything off. And it's just going to be a colossal pain in the ass, especially when you eventually have to haul it all down to a junkyard and pay to get thrown out anyway. Unless,
yeah.
I think unless you're someone really weird who owns like 9 Can-Ams, and then you found one that wasn't working, but it would be worth it to you because you have all these other bikes that it could service. Maybe it makes sense to you. Maybe it makes sense if you're like a privateer racing team and you have the corpse of the bike that you crashed out in the last race around because you're going to take parts off of it that are still good. But you're also going to get rid of it in a timely manner. Unless you're in some weird, very predictable state where you're going to get some value out of it, like, it's just dumb. You're better off just paying for the parts from a dealer or from a scrapyard or looking them up on eBay. The parts bike is just not a good idea.
I agree. How are you set up for emails right now?
I would have to dig and grab them, but I can do that reasonably quickly.
Okay, I'll give you one more secret question. I was talking earlier about Honda and how they kind of really don't want their customers to race. They're like, hey, leave that to us. You know, for the few of you who really are serious, like, we'll kind of let you buy a MotoGP bike on the side here, but, like, you know, we're not even going to put up a price. Like, you've just got to be serious enough to know. And then they've got the CBR, you know, RRRRRR for, you know, other sort of serious people. But in general, they kind of don't want the public going racing. And as a result, like, a lot of their bikes are kind of like the slightly tuned down things. And people go like, oh, yeah, but it's a Honda. Like, there's Hondas are so mild and whatever. When really they're only sort of like, they only slice off like 2% of performance versus all the rest of the competition, and they go for the reliability instead. But here's the secret question. What do you think it would take for Honda to make an actually aggressive bike, or at least perceived as aggressive?
I think they'd have to go, they'd have to go really extreme. I think what they would have to do is, well, actually, I think what they would have to do is do something similar to what they did with the CBR 1000 RRR. Except instead of having, I think they would just have to basically take the motor out of that. Maybe even push it a little bit further. But after that, what they would then have to do, I think, is actually put as little Honda stuff on it as possible. I think they would have to actually push aftermarket and third party second party suppliers as like the face of the bike. So it would have to be almost more represented by like Brembo and Ohlins or Showa, and maybe even like some sort of like factory spec brand or some shop. Rather than, kind of in the same way that like anything that's kind of somewhat performance is kind of more SNS than it is Harley, they would need some sort of rebrand like that, so it wasn't just a Honda. They'd have to push another brand on top of it to get away from kind of the perception of their own brand, I think.
I had a few ideas. Like, one, I think it'd be great if Honda just released a factory Bosozoku based off of the Africa Twin. And I don't know what they'd call it. Or I thought, what if Honda decided to make a 2-liter air-cooled V-twin, right? And threw it in the Honda Fury, right? But kind of redid the Fury in revamped the look of it. But here it would have to be in the name instead of the Fury, right? I think this would be a real big left turn for Honda, but call it something that's on the verge of offensive, like the Supremacist or something like that. Like, cause doesn't that sound so perfectly Japanese and so perfectly Harley Bro at the same time?
I mean, technically, the Confederate flag is in Honda colors, so...
Yeah. Put, like, the old 1950s Honda Power Wing on the oil tank, right? Give it a separate transmission to the thing, an exposed belt drive, you know, rake it out somehow even further and call it the Supremacy. I just came up with that. I'm in love with this name. This would be a real big turn for Honda. But it's like I talk about, like, you know, riding around on the scooters flipping people off. I'm just doing the Lord's work trying to dirty up the image of scooters so more people will buy scooters, right? Scooters are too clean.
I mean,
they're too safe.
The alternative would be to, like, just make a bike that's really, really practical for theft. You know, like, what's the scooter of choice for swiping phones out of people's hands while they're standing at the crosswalk? Like, yeah. what's the best bike for evading the police?
Probably the Prilia 50, but here we go. Actually, before the emails, there's one more. I think we should end with emails. Let's do one more thing. So in the episode you're going to hear next week, we talk a bit about Cleveland Moto's 24-hour scooter race they're going to have about a year from now. And it's on. Oh, my God, it's on. I have some thoughts. Phil, yesterday, or maybe today, released some preliminary rules for this. If you haven't heard about this, a few weeks ago on Cleveland Moto, they had this idea for a 24-hour Le Mans-style race on buddy scooters. And we fell in love with this idea. We have a limited number of times per year we can go across the country for shit like this. So if I have one thing I can go across the country for next year, it is this. I will go a year without any other bullshit, like, just for this. I'm going to skip Mid-Ohio. I'm putting all my eggs in this basket. I'm deadly serious about that. So Phil said he doesn't want to do tech rules. Just, it's got to be a buddy scooter. He was like, if you want to have a cheater motor, go for it. If you want to whatever, 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 go for it. So here's what I'm thinking. We just keep our eyes peeled, Swigs, for a free non-running buddy scooter. Just whatever condition buddy scooter that's free. Whatever the first one we find is, boom, go pick it up. We got it. I think we get a Chinese GY6. 150 motor. I think a Chinese GY6 150 is sort of roughly equivalent to a Buddy 125 in terms of power. I think we you know, we and those GY6 motors are like, you know, $250, $300, right? It's a kick in the nuts, but it'll be transferable to every other engine afterwards. I say we drop $800 on the fuel injection kit. And our strategy is, you know, standard Buddy 125 power, crazy high fuel efficiency, plus the comfort mods we talked about on the scooter episode.
I think it's a solid plan.
Now, Phil went on about all kinds of little things that are going to interrupt the race, little challenges along the way and everything. I don't think it should be, personally, I don't think anyone should come up with anything that involves the bikes leaving the pits. Phil was talking about drag races on the side and everything, and it's like, how do you... And that just, like, stops people, like, losing their advantage that they fought so hard for. It just keeps, like, resetting the race over and over again. I don't see the point in that. And he was talking about all these weird things that could happen during the race. And I'm like, well, fuck you. If you're going to have a team, how do you also get to, like, set the rules and be the judge of this? That doesn't make any sense. It's all going to be biased towards you. And I was getting mad. I was throwing things. I was beating my own children, pretending they were Phil. All these things. And then he said, but here's what it is. Each participating team gets to make up one of these challenges. All of a sudden, I'm back on board. This is fantastic. So we've got to figure out what our strength is and, of course, make a challenge based around that. What I'm leaning towards is you've got to come in, and for a certain number of laps, you got to ride two up. Or until your next pit, you have to complete, like, let's say a minimum number of laps. This is the challenge I like. You have to come in, and for a minimum number of, you have to switch riders. So you have to leave with a different rider, but with a passenger, which could be anybody. It could be someone not on your team. It doesn't matter. And do like a minimum of like three laps or something, right? And that turns it into one of those things like those MotoGP races where it starts to rain and it's like, do I go in and change tires or do I ride it out, right? Because, because like you might still keep up a decent speed with two riders, right? So some people might go out there and be like, okay, I did my minimum three laps or whatever. I'm just going to take the hit, go in and toss this person and go back to my other thing. And then you just lost some known amount of time. But if you go out there with two people and they're feeling good, can you make it to your next, like, can you make it the whole tank, right? And avoid that extra pit and gain some time, right? Like, can you keep the time up with the two people? I like it.
I do like two up as a challenge because you've got to pick a moment to do it, or at least you've got to be ready when it comes up. I don't know if you would ever go particularly long on it. I feel like you probably just start losing time pretty quickly.
But what if you're not? I mean, it's, you know, what if you get, like, if it's a big course, you know, you can just kind of keep it pinned and, you know, you're going around these big turns and you've just got, like, huge amounts of time. And as long as you keep your speed up.
I guess that's true. If it ends up being a track, like a car course, where you can legitimately just pin the throttle and just carry the full speed through every single turn. Yeah, you may actually just be able to do, like, 20 laps and...
and not lose any time, and the person on the back's just got to deal with it. Yeah.
Well, the only problem with this is it's only going to work out that way where it makes sense to stay out if you can legitimately cut a full fuel stop out.
Well, when you come back in to put the two riders in, you'd be an idiot not to fill the bike with fuel.
That's true. So I guess you're already introducing an extra stop.
Yeah, so by staying out there, well, here's you are cutting out a stop because other people will come back in and try to dump the passenger.
I guess this is another logistical thing is like, will you have to be in the pits when a challenge starts? I think that'll factor in as well.
I don't know. Phil, I'm going to suggest that as each team registers...
I'm wondering like if you should have to time your pit stops to arrive to align with the challenges.
I think as each team registers, they should have to register with what their challenge is. You know, and those will all be in sealed envelopes. Although, no, because then Phil knows ahead of time what the challenges are and no one else does. We need the challenges to be sent to an impartial judge who's not participating. And then that person can show up on the day with all the envelopes of the challenges.
Well, there may need to be some veto power involved. Like, I think the challenges will have to be approved in some fashion.
Phil knows some racers that would be wise enough to accept or reject these without, you know, necessarily letting Phil know what they were or what, all that stuff.
I think it's fine if everybody knows what they are in advance.
I kind of like the surprise element.
I mean, this is 24-hour racing. There's motors involved. There's going to be exhaustion. People are going to be at risk, at significant risk of crashing. I don't know if I need the surprise element.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's all the update we need on that. So, yeah, send in emails if you want to be part of this team. We've got a full year, so, you know, there will be some funding of the team asked from you, you know. But, you know, we'll throw in some Patreon money for this as well. All right, emails. What do we got?
Okay. All right. So this is from Dan. And Dan, the title of this is Derivative Bland Superbird. He says, "All bite. Happened to own a Triumph Thunderbird Storm. Seems to be one of those bikes more appreciated by folks who don't even ride. I bought it because it's awesome. I ride it because it's awesome. Pragmatically, I like the value proposition. If I'm not mistaken, it puts out the power of a 114 Fat Boy, which I've never ridden before. You guys rule. Takes a while to even find the time to trash one. Not well known enough or known about to trash for an earlier appearance on the pod. Not much of a conversation piece, evidently, but boy howdy, he's got some grunt. Smooth ride, nimble, relatively quick, unless revved, and even then quite a sleeper. At any rate, keep trucking. I dig the pod. I ride alone, but when I see someone who put stage 3 money in a Harley Davidson, I know what I have. Sportster S and Victory 8 ball in the stable. Cheers from Colorado Springs." There may be... Okay. Too many sentences in that paragraph.
It's fine.
Could have flowed a little better, but...
Don't criticize the emails, all right? They're all wonderful. So, the storm. We were harsh on the storm. I think, in the end, it wasn't a performance thing. I mean, I know we said something about the price. I mean, the word Triumph bumps everything up at minimum $500. Like, no matter how shitty it is. But, yeah, you probably could find one. I mean, yeah, it can definitely get out of its own way, that's for sure. I mean, yeah, if... You know, I'm into so much weird stuff that other people just plain don't get. you know, I can see the type of person writing it that enjoys that it's just an oddball cruiser. I think maybe what bothered me the whole time was the Triumph Bonneville America was kind of a flop, and they thought, well, instead of abandoning this idea, let's double down with the Thunderbird. But yeah, you know, as I always say, no matter how much I've trashed on a bike, if you're stoked about your bike, I'm stoked with you. So yeah, that's fantastic. What else have we got, Swigs?
All right, we've got an email from so we've got one from our serial emailer, Peter from Australia, and he says, "Hello, boys. It's been a while since I popped an email, but still a loyal listener. Couple of things. With my Antipodean impressions of a tiki bar is entirely formed by the Disneyland Enchanted Tiki Room, I was constantly distracted by your background playlist. Started tiki, veered into Carmen Miranda, careered through the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Road to X movie series with a Cuban handbrake turn. A wild ride." You know, I have no idea what music Peter overlaid on that, because there was no music playing while we were recording. Peter just took some creative license with that episode. And
so they're all actually classic. So the category of music, if you didn't gather from the title of the episode, it's Exotica, which was a not necessarily solely invented by, but sort of accredited to Martin Denny. And it's basically lounge music, and yeah, there's a lot of like Latin beats, there's a lot of hand drums in it, and it's sort of all vaguely tropical music, even though it's not at all. And just like everything else tiki, as far as its cultural influence, it's all made up. None of it's real. This is the beauty of tiki. It's a 1950s fantasy. So your Bob Hope like Road 2 movies is spot on. That is right smack dab in the center of the heart of tiki, honestly. It's escape, it's suburban escapism, and it's all just sort of vaguely something, you know, from somewhere. It's not real, you know. It's all fake. It's all made up. So that's what it was supposed to be, and that's what it is. There you go. Yeah. And they were the most popular tracks I pulled from an Apple playlist called Tiki Essentials, or Exotica Essentials. So these are all prime examples of the genre.
Okay.
So there's also the original Mambo Number 5 in there.
All right, well, there's some more tiki talk, and then there's some actual motorcycle contents in here, so I'm going to keep going. It says, thankfully, the uke brought us back in the outro. For some solid tiki soundtrack, I recommend The Man from Snowy Aloha, a segment from Aussie 70s sketch comedy legend The Auntie Jack Show, Auntie Jack's The Fat Sheila, at the end with a mustache and boxing gloves. How the show made it to 70s TV in Australia remains a mystery. He says, there is a Honda middleweight tourer, just not for the USA at this stage, as far as I know. Not a revised NTV 650/700 DeVille. And he says, the 700 was actually a good one-up tourer, not racy, but solid. And he says, it's an Africa Twin derived streetable NT1100. Which I think we did talk about when it was announced, but I think it was Europe only. This bike hasn't shown up for us yet. And he says, it's a chain drive, which may offend, but otherwise pretty solid. Visually, the exhaust routing is about the only issue of mine. We've had a couple of years of La Nina over here, so so much rain since the 2019 burn. Got kind of sick of wet riding days, which have set us up nicely with plenty of fuel for the likely return of the La Nina fucker this summer. I want to look forward to warm sunny days, but after Hawaii, I can already sense the bushfire smoke. Fingers crossed for a good spring riding season. Cheer, Peter in Australia. One thing I will say is I don't think that shaft drive is a necessity for a touring bike. And in fact, if your bike is light enough and the chain is easily accessible without taking any shit off, chain's probably preferred.
No, I'm always going to prefer the shaft on a touring bike.
On something like the Valkyrie, where it's would be a colossal pain in the ass to get to a chain, absolutely. Especially because that motor just doesn't make sense with a chain drive. But I don't think a shaft drive is an absolute requirement. The other thing I say is I have never cared about exhaust routing. Well, except on the CB1000, because it legitimately burned your foot.
Yeah. This bike is curious. I do remember thinking about this. The thing about this bike is it looks like a Honda from 12 years ago. In terms of the bodywork and the aesthetics. This is an era of Honda that I actually love and most people hate, but remember like the VFR 1200, not the X, but just like the VFR 1200 and that CBR 250 that kind of inherited its looks from the same time. I'm one of like the 8 sick fucks that loved that. And this kind of has vibes of that to me.
Yeah, I kind of like this. Although I did not like that 1200 VFR. This doesn't really look the same though, because there's so much bodywork that made that look.
But I argue that an 1100 is a middleweight tourer.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's kind of weird.
Middleweight tourer, I think 500 to 800. Maybe 850 is as high as I'll go for middleweights.
You know, actually looking, you know, he was complaining about the exhaust routing. And now that I look at this, here's a question for you. A supplemental secret question. Is there a style of exhaust routing that is acceptable to everyone? Because there's people who complain about underseat, taking away underseat storage and heating up the seat. There's people who complain about it slung up higher and getting in the way of bags. There's people who don't like it down low. Is there an acceptable place, a universally acceptable place, to put an exhaust on a motorcycle?
Absolutely not. Because the number one thing that uneducated assholes who don't know anything mechanical about their vehicle to complain about is the exhaust and the wheels. It number one thing is like, or if you just want to consider yourself sort of like, you know, like I call these people like, you know, the radio DJs of the world, right? We don't have DJs anymore. Well, I guess we do, but they're even grosser. But like, remember like old radio show hosts and whatever, their taste was their talent, which is such a ridiculous concept.
It's a fascinating way to call yourself a talentless hack.
Yeah. People will be like, ugh. It's great. But that exhaust, though. Because most exhausts are sort of unremarkable, right? And they are all the way they are now. They're designed to be as unintrusive and out of the way as possible while still holding a whole bunch of shit, because there's noise regulations and there's catalytic converters and air sensors and all this stuff that they have to accomplish. There's a hardcore line in the sand job that they have to do. And you try doing better, right? But people love to get up in arms and disgusted about an exhaust. And then if they do manage to change the exhaust, which is quite a fucking feat these days, as we said, with the fuel injection and the mapping and the sensors and all this crap. But what did they always do, Swigs? What do they always do? They throw a can on the end.
Yeah.
Just a weird round thing that's just bolted and clamped on. And there's it wasn't aesthetically matched to the bike in any way. Guess what? The heat shield, they ripped that fucker off. So what the manufacturer's not supposed to put a heat shield on there? Every single write up will contain the words, "Oh, but you'll burn your heel on this exhaust," and da 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 da. So they have to put a heat shield on there. Duh. Or, I don't know. It is something that people love to complain about because they're always going to be able to complain about it. And some people think that just purely complaining and never saying anything positive makes them sound smart. And so I don't waste my time talking about exhaust. I don't. I rarely have ever ridden in a way, you know, maybe on some scooters I've ridden in a way that like, if I had a different exhaust, maybe I could be riding this a bit more and riding more aggressive, more the way I'd like to. But on a big motorcycle with 50 to, you got to stop doing that. With like, you know, 50, 60 something horsepower, whatever, I've just never, the exhaust has never held me back. And then people want to talk about, oh my gosh, the noise and the this and the that and the whatever. Like, they all sound cool in their own way. I don't know. There's some sort of old dudes seem to think that there's some sort of holy grail, like, sound aesthetic that you should be going for. No one's ever been able to talk to me about exactly what that is and how you achieve that. I think people just throw something on, it sounds different, and then in order to justify their move, they're like, "Doesn't that sound great?" And then people don't want to seem dumb, so they go, "Yeah, it does. Oh, so glad we didn't leave it the way it was, like those fucking idiots at Honda had it." Right? Yeah. There is no such thing as an acceptable exhaust. No such thing. There hasn't been for at least 12 years, probably longer. No one will ever claim, besides me and you maybe, will ever openly claim to like a stock exhaust. Because they're afraid to. They're afraid that they'll seem somehow uneducated or whatever. I can look at it.
And you hear that, Peter? You're being called out.
Well, I know I can look at the exhaust system and go, okay, I know what kind of crazy limits are put on these engineers, and they were able to take it and sculpt it this way. And to me, the industrial design elements of that, I see a lot of effort and care, and I'm like, okay, someone made something happen here.
You know, to me at this point, having a stock exhaust on any kind of performance, I don't think it applies too much to this bike, but on any kind of performance bike, having the stock exhaust is kind of a statement. It's sort of like not having tattoos.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing too. You know, on this bike, you know, like the routing he's talking about specifically. So the all the pipes going into one on the right side. Well, they were also limited to the right side because this is chain drive. You can't have it obstructing the chain. Like, what if you had to take the exhaust off every time you changed your chain? People would go fucking bananas, right? They'd be like, "This is such a dumb idea." Mechanics would complain about it. Dealerships would complain about it. Customers doing their work at home would complain about it. No. Now, if it's a shaft drive, sure, that has to be maintenance you know, the maintenance periods are long enough in between. It's not the end of the world to take it off, you know, once every, you know, 8 years or whatever it takes you to do, you know, 20, 30,000 miles in between. And a modern system should have, you know, points where you can put a grease gun on it, you know, and like squeeze it till new grease comes out the other side and shit like that. Mm. But, I don't know. All right, next email.
Okay. This is from Matt. And he says, I've been trying to write this for what feels like weeks and keep forgetting. The Sequest Scooter Club is hilarious, but the X-Files-based club is a fantastic idea. If you're not running with that idea, I might whip up a logo and run it when I actually find some free time. I feel like there has to be some good ways to incorporate X-Files quotes into funny designs. You know, like, I want to believe that scooters are cool, or something along those lines.
Oh, no, it's after all you've seen, how can you not believe that scooters are cool?
In the meantime, I'll look into acquiring the required Sequest action figure. There are A-specific action figures that will earn me more cred with the club.
Dr. Z.
Dr. Z's a solid one, yeah. Also listening to the Mike Atoll episode had me
fired up. If you can get Darwin with his scuba gear.
I forgot about the scuba gear.
Well, yeah, how does Darwin leave the boat for extended periods of time when they're deep down? He's got his scuba gear.
It's true. I was a big fan of Dax. But anyway. He says, also the episode had me fired up. I had to read for myself. The more I read from him, the worse it got. Since Mid-Ohio, Missy and I have started a podcast, and I was fired up for the episode too. Ended up being a bit of dogpiling on Micah. Of all vehicles to claim are noisy, unreliable, and inefficient, there must be what feels like a billion vehicles to choose from before picking up any small bore Honda, especially a modern one. They are arguably one of the most refined ICE vehicles in existence, and definitely so within the two-wheeled world. Anyways, excited for the Scooter Dan episode. I don't know if Honda vehicles are the most refined. I would say that they are the
you
best.
You did notice that this is an email from Motohop, right?
I do now.
Okay. Just wanted to point that out.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Matt, if you want to run with the X-Files idea, we can have sister clubs. That is absolutely fine. Even better. We're the best 90s-based sci-fi TV scooter club. No, we're the best 90s sci-fi series-based scooter club.
We're going to have to just like start doing the West Side Story standoffs.
That's right. X-Files club, I don't know, that it would it be the Foxes or the Scullies? No, they'd have to be the cigarette smoking men.
They could just be the smokers.
No, instead of the cigarette smoking man, because there's multiples, they're the cigarette smoking men. That's good. That's real good. And I love that it's so un-PC. It specifically genders your group, which is not super cool these days. Also, there's nothing more un-PC than cigarettes anymore, apparently.
Yeah, there's that. Well, I'm trying to think. There's got to be some other things you could do with it. What was the secret organization called?
The Lone Rangers?
No, the Lone Rangers are the three dorks.
That's also another great sort of X-Files. Okay, the Lone Rangers might be better than
Lone Rangers is solid. What was
I
this?
Just want to create 30 different scooter clubs. We can just keep swapping out banners everywhere we go.
The Syndicate.
Oh, the Syndicate. Of course, the Syndicate.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a good one.
The Syndicate is good. Yeah, because the Syndicate has like a whole bunch of other themes you can run with, but it, and like great like art ideas. But also, you can always, you know, finally circle back to it being X-Files based.
You could always, well, you could also theme for the Syndicate really easily. You just have to put on like a big, like a big white like hazmat suit and a mask and goggles, then you're already a, like a cameo from several scenes in the X-Files.
Yeah, like at every scooter meetup, you just show up with an Easy Up, and you just tape up like Dexter plastic all around it, and just have a table in there and some spotlights pointed in weird directions.
Yeah,
and then someone in a yellow or a white hazmat suit walks in and out, and then like someone walks in with a hazmat suit and then comes out in a black suit, and then yeah,
I think this is solid.
Okay, so we need to do more. Well, okay, so yeah, so we are doing the Sequest Club, like absolutely. That's running that direction. So if you want to go with X Files, go for it. I mean, you got that nice 250 scooter that you got at Mid Ohio. That was nice. It was like a. Did they get the Scarabeo? Or did they get the People 250? They're basically the same bike, just in different plastics. They got a big ass scooter, though. I was kind of jelly.
Yeah.
Let's see. So he mentions the mic. Did you listen to the?
I haven't.
I really laid into Electrek, and I picked some specific articles, and said some really nasty things about how idiotic they were for the idiot things they said. And a lot of it was, I said, you know, more than anything, despite all the things that they're wrong about on the electric vehicles themselves, there's this article where he and his wife rented this scooter to ride around the island of Menorca.
Oh, you told me about this separately.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, he complained that it was noisy, and he complained that it vibrated too much, and he complained that he had range anxiety on it, even though the tank could actually ride the entire coast of the island. Like, one tank. All this stuff. And it wasn't even a 125 or a 150 scooter. It's a 110. You know, and he was like, where's all the power? And I'm like, the amount of power you're getting out of that 110 is quite astonishing, actually. And I just couldn't believe that this person was making all these claims about this vehicle. And I'm like, this person rides low power shit all the time, and it's like this class of vehicle is something that they report on all the time. How can they be so completely off base? And it's like, look, if he's this off base on a Honda 110 scooter, like, how can we trust, like, anything he's saying about, like, this person's fundamentally not a motorcyclist, electric or gas. There's fundamentally not, was what I went into. And I don't know. It's getting me fired up again thinking about it.
Okay, let's move on then.
Let's move on, yeah.
Okay, we got a message here from...
Oh yeah, Leon wants to be the next Patreon listener guest.
All right, let's go through the email.
Sorry.
This is from Leon, and he said, hey guys, I've been in the weeds, hard at work, just started a new job. So I'm way behind listening to the show, but I'm slowly making my way through the backlog. I'm a couple episodes past the Cannonball episode, which, although I have zero to add to the subject, I fucking loved it nonetheless. Anyway, just got up to the episode where you had a Patreon member, Josh, on the show. That is so dope. Can I be next? I'm in Australia, so I know the time zone is fucked, but I'll get up whenever I have to make it work. I'm not sure if this is all logistically possible from here, but if it is, I'm fucking there. Yes. And so we have corresponded with Leon, and I think we'll...
Yeah, he's supposed to get back to me on whenever he buys the gaming headset. Told him to head down to Cashies and pick it up for some dollary dues. And yeah, we'll see what happens. So just remember, if you join the Patreon at, I don't even care what dollar level, you can send us a message and you can be part of the show. Absolutely. Maybe even two episodes. Who knows? There's no hard rules here.
Yeah, the latency during the theme song sing-along is going to be legendary coming all the way from Australia.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. That's good. I love a good out-of-sync intro. Okay.
Oh.
Any more we got here?
We got this one from Steven, who says, hey, guys. A quick note to say thank you for such an entertaining and engaging podcast. I'm a six-year-old motorcycle junkie who travels around Western North and South Carolina to various hospitals in my medical role. Probably average around 2 hours one way about every day. Imagine my joy when I discovered your show in late August. I'm in late April 2018, and I'm really looking forward to getting caught up, probably by early 2024. Just a pleasure to be able to sit around the table talking bikes with you. Well done all the way around. I am now sustaining my habit with three bikes, a 2011 Yamaha WR250R.
Nice.
Set up for traveling the great outdoors of North Carolina. I'm sure it would qualify for both best and worst bike in the world this week, and I'm sure I could argue both. It's been a loyal friend for the past 5 years and 10,000 miles.
I have zero complaints about that motorcycle. I really need to just own one at some point.
Mm-hmm. He says, my second bike is going against most of your counsel, but it's a passion for me. 68 Honda CL450 K1. Just plain love it.
That's a labor of love, but okay.
He says, all original except for tires, tubes, battery, and cables. Also now has electronic ignition. It had to wimp out somewhere.
Okay. All right. No, I respect that choice. The electronic ignition for that bike is not a cheap part, okay? It's real tough to look at that bike and pull the trigger and get the electronic ignition. It's like $350, $300 somewhere in there. It's like the most expensive part you'll ever put on the bike. But oh my God, life is so much better after you do it. We did that with the CB350. That's how we got it to run right and then sell it. Right. Well, and also at a certain point you're gonna have to. No one's making those points anymore. The points are getting really hard to find. So you've just gotta get the electronic ignition. So in a way, like yeah, it'd be cool to try to sell one as all original, but like you wouldn't want one with the points. And I'm getting close to getting that way with the Goldwing. I've had to like reset them, and I'm just like, do I want to fuck with the points that much longer on this thing? You know. So no, I respect that. I don't think it's wimping out, because in a few years, no one's gonna have any fucking choice anyway. And at least you knew how to do it. You're not some like 23-year-old fucking douchebag with a buzzed haircut and a 6-foot beard who has such an old soul, buys a vintage bike and has no idea what to do with it. So yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And then he says, my third bike is a project in its near completion phase, an 81 Honda XL 500S. Completely unrestored cosmetically, just brought back to life from near death. It's been a blast. Anyway, thank you for having the passion to bring such a great program and platform to the Ether world. You are greatly appreciated. Stay safe and be well. Oh, you did send some photos as well. I haven't looked at these.
Yeah, it's like this WR. Okay. Yep, so that's set up for the road. Let's see. Oh, it's not the CB. It's the CL450.
Yeah, he said CL.
Oh, did he? I had a CB450 in my mind, but okay. You gotta... That is an exhaust you gotta love.
I do love
any those. Honda CL exhaust is quite a nice thing. Yeah, back in the days when you had no limits and you could sculpt literally anything. That Honda XL, it's not the greatest picture, but I can see what's going on there. Cool. I mean, not one of the more popular models, but whatever. I mean, I want to say that's the Honda line before the XRs, but the XRs went into as far back as the 70s, didn't they, on some of those? I don't know. I'm not clear exactly what separates the XL from the XR line. I couldn't really tell you. I should look more into that. But cool bikes. Cool bikes. And he's riding to hospitals in some sort of medical role. I don't know.
Yep. That's all I've got right now.
I think there should be a law that if you're on your way to a hospital, you should be able to lane split.
I'd prefer just everyone got to lane split.
Well, I know, but like if you start with these little exceptions, right? You can put some cracks in the foundations. You can start the slippery slope.
That's true. It could be the gateway into lane splitting.
Yeah. All right. And I don't know how much time we're at, but what should we...
We're probably around an hour and a half.
An hour and a half? Okay, I think it's enough show for now. And at the end, we'll also say thank you, Adam, for the posters. It was awesome of you. And we're going to put some up here in this studio. I don't think they're really going to work super well for the tiki bar, but I gave a couple to Dr. Mike already because he helped me a lot. He got me basically out like from the verge of death last week. And I don't know, maybe we should sign some and see if people, I don't know, would anyone be interested if we just like signed a couple posters and mailed them to you for, you know? Maybe that's another, I don't know. Maybe this week, just this week, let's say for the month of September 2023, if you sign up for the Patreon, all right, you can send me your address. I'll mail you a freaking poster and like Swigs and I will sign it or something. Only for this month. Don't join the Patreon 8 years from now and be like, I need a fucking poster. Okay. That'll just be a little extra sweet, sweet prize only for this month. Cause we've got a lot of these things and they're going to like, we're going to cover a wall or two in this room and then still have some left over.
Do you want to put an end date, like a specific end date on that?
Yeah. The end of this month, the end of September, 2023.
Okay.
That's what I said. Only this month. All right. There we go. Right. Sound effects. The sound effects will be stupid again. All right.
And I don't want to die. Just want to ride on my motor. Sigh. Mm-hmm. Gold.